Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Compliance Week news podcast. I'm Matt Kelly, editor of Compliance Week, and today we are going to talk about internal controls, and specifically whether the COSO framework for internal control over financial reporting, which many companies use as their basis for compliance with Section 404 of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, whether that framework really achieves the strong control environment we'd all like to have. Our guest is the one and only Tim Leach. Tim is a well-known and longtime voice in the compliance community who has previously worked with Navigant Consulting and Paisley Systems and who now heads his own consulting firm, Leach & Company GRC. Tim has been drafting a paper about the flaws of the COSO internal control framework, and I particularly wanted to focus in on one idea of his, and that is the inadequate attention to what he calls commitment controls to ensure that employee behavior is aligned with the company's objectives. So we asked him to join us today, and Tim, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Matt.
So first question is just if you could maybe outline the concept of commitment controls for us, maybe give an example of what one is and why you think they're so important.
Sure. The term commitment controls was first identified in a formal way as a control category in the 1995 Canadian Criteria of Control Framework, which is better known as COCO. That's how it's referred to by the SEC. The commitment controls in the Canadian framework are defined as follows: commitment groups criteria that provide a sense of the organization's identity and values. Specific commitment controls in COCO include Principle B2 that states human resource policies and practices should be consistent with an organization's ethical values and the achievements of its objectives. The Collaborative Assurance and Risk Design Framework, better known as CARD model, which I developed for training purposes to teach workshops to management, work teams, auditors, define commitment controls by first asking a very broad question. That question was, are the people that are important to the achievement of specific objectives committed to the achievement of those objectives? An example would be if you're running a mine and the objectives that the mine managers are remunerated for are only related to financial dimensions, and you have a safety objective which relates to minimizing accidents, you might decide that there's not alignment there because it's too unidimensional in terms of the reward system. The CARD model framework dedicates an entire section to what we call commitment controls in a category called motivation, reward, punishment mechanisms, and these include things like performance evaluation system, promotion practices, firing and discipline practices, reward systems, monetary reward systems, non-monetary. So to give you a specific example, if we took the category of promotion practices and people that are promoted are seen by others in the organization as people that are only focused on financial results, it may in fact not be positive in terms of things like product quality or customer service objectives if those are not seen as well connected.
So now I was going to ask how commitment controls might be addressed in the COSO framework, but COSO came about in 1992, and you're saying that these kind of trace their origins back to 1995 up in Canada. So where do they fit into the COSO framework if they fit in at all?
Well, there is a connection. When Canada was very much aware of the development of the COSO framework in 91, and there was a lot of analysis and discussion and debate in Canada between 92 and 94 about whether Canada as a country, and specifically the auditing profession in particular, should just adopt the framework that had been issued by the Committee of Sponsoring Organizations, because there is no Canadian representation on that committee, but there was a lot of discussion whether we should just adopt COSO. And the decision was is that after a lot of research and analysis, the Canadians decided that there were a number of dimensions that they felt, the Canadian group that was studying this, they thought were really important, and one of those areas was commitment controls. They felt that it was of such importance that it deserved a whole category. So in COSO 92, you have five categories: control environment, risk assessment, etc. The Canadians decided commitment controls were so important, they would give it its own category to elevate the importance of it, if you will. Mm-hmm. The COSO framework that was built in 91-92, it does have elements of what we would call commitment controls. It's not a question of whether they're absent, it's a question of whether they have the same level of importance that are should be dedicated to it if you're assessing control.
Now, let's say I'm an internal auditor listening to this podcast. I think that the idea of commitment controls is great. Who should be devising those kind of controls? Because at first glance, the concept sounds more like a softer sort of a business control that business managers or HR people would be creating rather than internal auditors trying to implement them. What would you say about that?
Well, the notion of who should be developing controls, when I was building the framework that I developed for teaching and training purposes in the area of control, I felt that this was another dimension that was not emphasized adequately in the COSO 92 framework. Mm-hmm. And I developed, again, I gave a category, a full name called process oversight. And the purpose of process oversight, which is a category of controls, again, just like COSO has five categories, in the CARD model there's eight, one of which is commitment controls. But the single most important category in the framework I developed is called process oversight. And those are the people in the organization that are responsible for ensuring that all of the controls in totality, including commitment controls, are being applied in the right proportions in order to result in an acceptable level of retained risk. So if we look at a lot of the research studies into the current global economic crisis have concluded that the risk oversight done by many boards and many of the organizations at the root of this crisis was not adequate. Mm-hmm. And that would be a manifestation of a weakness in what I call process oversight controls in that organization. And it is that group that should be responsible for ensuring commitment controls, including aligning the reward systems, or in the case of the risk created by a misaligned reward system, mitigating the risks that go with it. It's their job. Now, at the highest level of oversight, well, you can argue that the SEC is a higher level of oversight, and then we have the board of directors. And then senior executives have the obligation of ensuring that commitment controls are properly applied across the organization. And again, the commitment controls also cover things like promotion practices, but also discipline practices. If you have people that are not complying with stated values and ethics in an organization and they're being rewarded through bonuses and or promotions, it undermines the entire control environment, and this is, again, another example of how commitment controls come into play.
So now we only have 2 or 3 minutes left here, but one last question then. If somebody wanted more advice on integrating commitment controls into their control environment, I mean, do you have any tips off the top of your head, things they should think of or resources they should look at for guidance on this to explore on their own or anything like that?
Yeah, I think, you know, the Canadians moved the ball forward in 95. They looked at the old 91-92 COSO framework. They felt it could be improved, so they came up with a category called commitment controls. But I think the most current places to look for that are particularly valuable are the OSEG's, it's called the GRC Capability Model, or also known as Red Book Version 2. Mm-hmm. It puts a lot of emphasis on the need for alignment of reward systems and the impact that what I would call commitment controls can have on that dimension. You could also, the CARD model is in the public domain, and it was featured as one of the tools in an Institute of Management Accountants paper called A Global Perspective on Assessing Internal Control Over Financial Reporting. That one's available for download off the web. It discusses specifically how you identify risks, and then if you in fact identify a risk that the reward system could result in improper conduct or illegal conduct in a worst case scenario. Once you've identified a risk, it's the obligation of the corporation to decide, how am I going to mitigate the risk? So for example, you know, take a simple example, you go into an electronics store and the people are hugely compensated on commission, and in particular commission for some things, but not others. Well, they might try and sell something to somebody that's not the right choice, and you identify that as a risk and say, well, how am I going to mitigate that? So those are some tips. The main thing I think that I want to leave with people is that the deficiencies in the old 91-92 COSO framework are big enough that they really should be compensated and supplemented with other frameworks.
All right. Tim, that's all the time that we have today, but you gave us plenty to think about and covered a lot of ground, so we really appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Matt. Pleasure to be with you.
And again, everybody, that was Tim Leach, head of Leach & Company GRC, talking with us today about the COSO internal control framework and how commitment controls should be part of your internal control efforts. That's all for this week's podcast. I'm Matt Kelly, editor of Compliance Week. Thank you all for listening, and I hope you join us again next time.